The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Good morning and happy Conspiracy Theory Thursday. It's 11 minutes after 6. Join the conversation at 770-5633. My email, by the way, is bill@billmeyershow.com. We're going to be talking a bit about some of those emails I received because I've been wondering what the Trump campaign is up to. As the Kamala Harris folks are talking about, oh, yeah, we're just going to drop another $60, $80, $90 million in ads out there to convince the rubes that the people that caused all the problems should be reelected for another 4 years. But anyway, we'll have a bit on that. People say they are getting some Kamala ads, but I don't know. I have my doubt. My problem is I've been getting nothing but Kamala ads. Maybe they look at me as the nut to crack. I don't know. But I'm just concerned. I'm seeing a lot of flat-footedness coming out of the Trump campaign. I'm not used to seeing that. And there's a lot of talk behind the scenes that the two people at the top of the campaign, who frankly were never really big supporters of Don in the first place. So once again, this is, makes me wonder, Don, why are you hiring people that don't, you know, love you or really trying to help you out? But okay, I don't want to get off into that right now, because I wanted to concentrate first this morning on a local drug mule story. And this was a story, you know, this was a sort of a routine story. I ended up getting a news release the other day. Traffic stop leads to seizure of 60 pounds of fentanyl pills. And this came from Jackson County. A traffic stop by the Oregon State Police canine unit, this happened on Monday, by the way, netted 60 pounds of fentanyl-laced pills destined for Portland. All right. So this happened about 8 in the morning. They have a state trooper with a canine officer. They stopped must have been a commercial motor vehicle. It must be a semi, right? Stopped a semi tractor on I-5 in Jackson County for a traffic problem. And so the drivers ended up consenting. The troopers found 2 5-gallon buckets filled with blue pills. These are being called now counterfeit pills. They were designed to look like prescription fentanyl pills. All right. Now, remember, 2 5-gallon buckets. That's a lot. So there were a couple of foreign national suspects there that they arrested. Daniel Pena Gregosa, a 42-year-old, and Josu Itzel Gomez Parra. That's a 28-year-old. They're both from Mexico. Because, you know, they're doing the jobs that Americans won't do, and that is making sure that we have fentanyl pills going to the homelessness encampments in Portland and Medford and Grants Pass and everywhere else. But I digress, all right? So the seized pills weigh 60 pounds, equivalent of about 276, all right, more than a quarter million fentanyl pills were grabbed from this traffic stop that the OSP ended up conducting Monday. So they get arrested. So these two people were arrested. Suspects Daniel Pena Gregosa and Parra arrested on charges of delivering and possessing a Schedule II substance. Yeah, you could say that again, right? So then I go to the report yesterday from the Rogue Valley Times. Now, police say the stop occurred at 8 a.m. Monday, involved an OSP canine trooper. I've already told you about this, all right? So Jackson County jail records show that Gomez Parra was booked into the jail Monday afternoon on all these charges: felony possession of a Schedule II controlled substance and delivering and possessing a counterfeit Schedule II controlled substance. No jail booking records existed for Gregoso, who I think was Gregoso the older guy? Yeah. Gregoso is the older guy. Gomez is the Gomez Parra was the one that there's a booking records for. Jackson County Circuit Court records indicated that they intended to prosecute Gomez Parra on a single charge of unlawfully delivering a Schedule II controlled substance. However, late Tuesday afternoon, Gomez Parra, now remember, this is the guy that they found with the other guy, 2 5-gallon buckets, more than a quarter million fentanyl pills there on I-5 OSP traffic stop, and they gave Gomez Parra a travel permit, allowing him to go back home with his co-defendant to his residence in Sonora, Mexico. Is that the most insane statement you've ever heard in a news report? So remember, 250,000 fentanyl pills, felonies, big-time felonies, two foreign nationals, and they were cut loose on Tuesday afternoon to go back home to Sonora, Mexico. Now, the travel permit instructs Gomez Parra to attend a court appearance scheduled for September 11th. It further set pre-release instructions that include no possession of alcohol, non-prescribed controlled substances, or cannabis. I would ask the silly question, how the hell would you know? They're in Sonora, Mexico! How is the Jackson County Court, how is the Jackson County District Attorney going to even know? And the bigger question, who in the heck thinks that these two clowns are going to show up September 11th for their court hearing when all they have to do is go to Sonora, Mexico, and, well, you just stay in Sonora, Mexico? Is there something about this case that I'm missing? Is there now some treaty that says if you are an illegal alien from Mexico driving a truck and you're doing the job that Americans won't do, and that is funneling fentanyl up and down the I-5 corridor to our inner cities and our homelessness encampments into Grants Pass, Ashland, Medford, Central Point, Eagle Point? You have to have someone to mule that stuff around. Is there a rule now that if you are a foreign national, you just get to go home and wait for your trial? And of course, if you don't show up, what are we going to do? We issue a failure to appear warrant. And so the next time you're caught on Interstate 5 carrying 250,000 fentanyl pills, then maybe we'll take you in. I'm really confused about this. It's a mystery to me. Now, I know that there are problems in the Jackson County Jail. Jail capacity is a problem. You get that. But something tells me that Sheriff Nate Sickler probably would have found a way to make some room for a couple of foreign nationals accused of muling more than 250,000 fentanyl pills up and down the I-5 corridor. In fact, I have a feeling that Sheriff Nate Sickler was probably not even involved in this conversation, because there was just a note given, well, just release these people and we agree to have them come back on September 11th. Now, and I'm sure that these being good law-abiding Mexican folks, that Daniel Peña Gragosa and Josu Itzel Gomez Parra will both be here September 11th for their court hearing in Jackson County. I'm sure, right? Maybe we should have a little betting market on that. What do you think the over or under would be on them showing up? But my question is, why would they have been cut loose in the first place? I wrote an email this morning to Patrick Green, who is our district attorney-elect. I don't know if he was in charge of this, because he's not the district attorney right now. He's the district attorney-elect. I know that I was kind of looking more for his competitor to go in, but the competitor, Bartholomew, did not convince enough voters. I kind of liked her because she was a little bit older, a little more seasoned, I guess. But I don't know. Maybe everybody was in love with Patrick Green because of the Asante case that he's now taking care of. And by the way, it may have nothing to do with Patrick Green, but I would have thought that this would have been some conversation, some topic of conversation down at the Jackson County District Attorney. Okay, we got a couple of drug mules, illegal aliens here, and we need to hold them here for a while. But, hey, listen, this is a pretty big drug bust. Think we can make some room? Think we can prosecute them? And by the way, they'd only be in jail for about a month or so until their September 11th hearing. Why don't we keep them here? Who at the Jackson County District Attorney's Office decided that it was a great idea to just write up a travel permit? A travel permit for the two drug mules to go home to Mexico. most likely never to be seen again. So I popped an email over to Patrick Green, and I said, Patrick, could you clarify what's going on here? Because this makes no sense. And I just sent it to him earlier this morning, so we'll give him some time to react. But he is the incoming district attorney. He's not the district attorney right now, but he is the assistant district attorney. I think inquiring minds would want to know, why the hell would you cut loose a couple of drug mules with a quarter million fentanyl pills on I-5 caught on Monday afternoon and have them go back to Mexico under the promise that they'll come back in September? Okay. And now, if you have any thoughts about this, or maybe you know people within this criminal justice system, maybe there is some rule, some treaty, something that I'm not aware of that says that illegal aliens get a free pass on drug crimes here in Southern Oregon because of the, is it the sanctuary city issue here, the sanctuary state, you know, the sanctuary state in which we, well, of course, we're not charging them. We're not even charging them with immigration crimes. It's not that. It's just that, you know, you're muling a quarter million or more fentanyl pills up and down the I-5 corridor. That's the crime. It has nothing to do with immigration. But you send them home to Sonora under the hopes that they come back? I don't think they're going to come back, do you? 770-563-3770-KMED. We can talk about that and other things. I know that's a big one on my mind this morning. Why would the district attorney or the people in charge of the criminal justice system do this? Was it the DA? Maybe it wasn't the DA. Maybe it's someone else. I don't know. I don't have enough answers for you right now. But we'll keep looking. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Every carpenter wants to teach his son how to do carpentry. But daughters can build things too. So when it comes to carpentry, tools, lumber, and building materials, remember that making the right choice is very important. And the right choice for lumber and other building materials is Hughes Lumber. At Hughes Lumber, they offer the best lumber at the best prices to all builders. Hughes Lumber, serving everyone on Crater Lake Highway.
Power outages are becoming more common. Patriot Electric can size you with the correct Generac generator backup system for when outages occur. Whether you need a powerful portable or a whole house system to power your house, barn, shop, and pump house, a flip of a switch will produce power when you need it the most to pump water and provide essentials like AC and refrigeration. Call Patriot Electric and get your own Generac generator, an investment you'll never regret. We are Generac sales, installation, and service professionals. Visit PatriotElectricOregon.com.
Rule number one, if you're looking to sell a home, choose a local real estate agent. Hey, it's Lars. And why? It starts with an overall knowledge of the area. But even more importantly, a local agent is a friend and neighbor who cares about the community just as much as you do. In the Medford area, that'd be my good friend Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty. Jared's a native of the Pacific Northwest, and his wife Colette is a former Oregon Young Mother of the Year. The Hokansons love Southern Oregon so much, they decided to raise their family there. If you're thinking of selling, Jared Hokanson guarantees to sell your home. And if he can't get it sold at a price and deadline you both agree to, Jared will buy it himself. Some restrictions do apply. Find out what your property is worth for free and instantly. 541-772-SOLD.com. Call Jared today at 541-772-SOLD. That's 541-772-7653. Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty.
Hi, I'm Jim with the Beauty Mark Salon and Glitter Bar, and I'm on KMED.
25 minutes after 6, join in at 770-5633, 770-KMED. Oh, boy.
One toll over the line, sweet Jesus, one toll over the line.
The question I had this morning is, what are they smoking down at the Jackson County District Attorney's Office this morning when a Monday traffic stop that yielded 60 pounds of fentanyl pills, more than a quarter million pills in a couple of five-gallon buckets in a semi-truck that was stopped by OSP, a couple of Mexican foreign nationals, Daniel Peña Gregosa and Josu Itzel Gomez Para, a 28-year-old, both from Mexico. They're arrested and charged with this, and then they were cut loose and given, apparently Tuesday afternoon, they were given a permission slip to return home to Sonora, Mexico, rather than remain in jail, under the promise that they come back September 11th for a trial. Now, that just makes no sense to me, because I can't help but think that if a local yokel ended up doing the same thing, and, you know, the whole idea is that you're supposed to show up for trial or show up for your hearing, how are you going to get a couple of people in Mexico, how are you going to force them to show up for a hearing? That doesn't make sense. You know, even the, people charged with other things, you usually have to put up some sort of bond or, you know, something to kind of guarantee that you're going to show up. What, you make a pinky promise to the Jackson County District Attorney's Office, and then you can just show up? A promise. I'll be back in September. This is not making sense. David, you think you can explain why it is that the two alleged drug mules from Mexico are allowed to go back to Mexico under the promise that they'll come back in September?
Yes. Okay, so I don't know if people know a lot about drug dogs, but essentially, you know, they really just want to get out of the car. They're stuck in the car 8 hours a day with the guy. You know, they want to get out of the car. Sometimes they do find drugs, but more often than not, they're simply listed in, you know, on a piece of paper as finding the drugs. And a lot of times what's occurring is, and in fact, almost always, I would argue, what's occurring is there's an ongoing federal investigation. They tell the state police, hey, there's a semi, these two guys are driving it. And they already know these two guys driving this truck are nobodies. Absolutely nobody of consequence is driving a semi with, you know, commercial amounts of drugs up and down I-5. These are not people of consequence.
By the way, I don't think this was not in the trailer. This was in the actual tractor, you know, section.
It doesn't matter. The feds tell that cop exactly where those drugs are. If anyone's under any illusion about how these traffic stops work, you know, one thing is listed for Fourth Amendment reasons or for public opinion reasons, but these are ongoing federal investigations that work with these cops to find these drugs. And I think it works fine, but these dogs aren't finding these drugs and these random multi-million dollar drug busts.
So in other words, you're thinking this was a fake drug bust to start with? Really?
It's not fake. It's not fake. But the way that these cases work, it's not just they don't talk about, you know, the level of coordination that's occurring. It's not in their best interest to tell people that, you know, everybody's phone is in the cartel is being tapped and they know where things are. That doesn't serve them. So they say, oh, the cop pulled the truck over. Wouldn't you know it? Multi-million dollar drug bust. I mean, that just doesn't work that way. It's silly to imagine it does.
Okay. Now, you know, there's going to be vest cam or you know, they have cams on the cars to indicate this.
Yeah,
he was stopped for a traffic violation. So there's a traffic violation that ended up triggering this.
Sure. Ostensibly, yeah.
Okay.
Do you believe that? I mean, I'm just asking, if you really think about it for 2 minutes, do you believe that a random stop like that nets this massive cartel operation? Or do you think, you know, that for Fourth Amendment reasons, they got to say it's the dog, but really the feds know the fentanyl's in the truck. They've been watching these guys.
Uh-huh. But still, that does not explain why you cut loose the two perps back
there.
They're
nobodies. They're guys kidnapped driving a truck, you know.
Hey, listen, the guys around here that are muling drugs around are nobodies, too. Come on, man. I'm sorry to use a Biden on you, but yeah, you know, everybody's a nobody if you're looking at that. What, unless it's a cartel guy there, you don't arrest anybody? Really?
In some sense, I mean, I just don't think the resources go to, you know, prosecuting people that are I think the resources don't go towards incarcerating and prosecuting people that are really no part in the process.
Oh,
you know,
okay. Well, if this is the case, though, we don't need a Jackson County jail because all we have to do is give me a little promise to come back.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure. I disagree with the decision. I mean, I don't. These guys aren't. They aren't really. When you think about it, they aren't anything in this drug epidemic. They're not the cartel boss. You know, there's some guys, and a lot of times, you know, we do find out that they're. You know, I mean, we've heard the stories, of course, of the families being kidnapped. So they were
just being offered quite a bit of money to drive a tractor trailer with no trailer on it up to Portland, right?
Maybe, maybe no money.
Oh, maybe no money.
Possibly.
Okay.
Possibly.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, that's a great conspiracy theory. I'd need a little more evidence on that, but I appreciate that, David. I really do.
What kind of batting average would a cop need? How many semis would he have to pull off to get that lucky? I just want to postulate it that way.
Okay.
I mean, that's a lot of fentanyl, isn't it? How lucky do you got to get to be the cop that finds a semi with that much fentanyl?
So, in other words, we're just we're witnessing directed history. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. But yet that doesn't explain why the Jackson County District Attorney writes them a permission slip that we'll just come back in September and we'll have a little talk about it. I just don't understand that why you wouldn't be, okay, you don't want to, David would say you don't want to prosecute the nobodies, but most of the people that get caught doing a lot of this stuff are nobodies. Just about everybody's a nobody. Unless you have them in jail, then you say, okay, well, who is the somebody that you're dealing with? I still don't understand why you would let them go back to Sonora. I don't know. If anybody has an idea, please let me know. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this?
This is Minor Dave.
Yes, Dave.
Yeah, I wanted to thank former Senator DeBoer for apologizing to me last Friday.
Oh, yeah, for banning the mining thing. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I wanted to say that I could tell that he had remorse in his heart and that I should forgive him.
Okay. Anything else on your mind this Conspiracy Theory Thursday?
Oh, yeah. There's lots of conspiracies out there. One is that, the British are in control of our Federal Reserve, and it's...
And then other people will tell me the Jews are in control of our Federal Reserve. Yeah, we have competing conspiracy theories this morning. Got it. All right. Thank you, Dave. I'm not going down the British world either. But anyway, hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Got it.
Hello?
Hey.
All right. You have to listen to the phone. Talk show radio number one. You listen to the phone, not the radio. Hi. Okay. You're not listening. You got to go. It's 6:33. All right. We'll let go of the drug mule story. Maybe we'll pick this up a little bit after 7 o'clock. Okay. But that one is this is going to be the gift that keeps giving in my crawl this morning, at least as far as law enforcement. Let's see. Someone's been text messaging me. Maybe it has something to do with that. Let's see. Oh, okay. Rural Talent Power went out up at Wagner Creek area a few minutes ago. God bless Pacific Power. Thank you. Thank you. Gosh, they can't. The third worlding of Southern Oregon continues. This is the Bill Meyer Show on KMED and KBXG. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
Are you buying or selling a house this year? Here's a tip from Grants Pass Water Lab. If you buy or sell a property with a well, Oregon requires tests for bacteria, arsenic, and nitrate. Don't let this slow you down. Get your well tested now. Grants Pass Water Lab offers next day results for bacteria tests and a speedy 3 to 5 days for the full reporting that meets all the state requirements. Online at gpwaterlab.com. Independent and serving the Rogue Valley for more than 40 years.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. A Jackson County traffic stop resulted in the seizure of 60 pounds of fentanyl pills. OSP pulled over a semi for a violation on I-5 in Jackson County. During a search of the cab, the trooper discovered 2 5-gallon buckets filled with blue pills, total 276,000 tablets. Two men, both from Mexico, were arrested on charges of possession and delivery of fentanyl. Oregon's unemployment insurance and paid leave Oregon customer service programs are reducing delays, but still many people are waiting for hours on hold. The legislature approved more staff who are finally taking calls. The problems have been going on for months. This week, construction crews began demolishing the Pomeroy Dam, an irrigation dam on the Illinois west of Cave Junction. Junction. It's the latest in a growing list of dams, more than 20 that have been removed from the region since 2004. A dozen more have been approved for fish passage. A number of locals protested the removal that was mandated after a lawsuit by environmentalist Bill London, KMED.
Life's busy, and off is not an option. You need to be on the water, on the call, on the road. Life's waiting. Power on with Batteries Plus. Visit one of over 700 locations today.
Did your mobile provider just increase their prices again? Switch to Spectrum Mobile, the nation's fastest growing mobile provider. With Spectrum Mobile, you get unlimited talk, text, and data, plus nationwide 5G. Switching to Spectrum Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your phone balance up to $2,500. Stop dealing with price hikes from your cell phone company. Get Spectrum Mobile. Visit spectrum.com/itpays to switch for full details. Offer subject to change. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Looking for reliable roofing experts? Turn to the family-owned gem of our community, Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc., your go-to for metal roofing solutions, offering 25-year workmanship guarantee on all projects. New construction, re-roofing project, residential or commercial, they've got you covered. This experienced team ensures a stress-free experience from start to finish. Choose quality. Choose Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. for your metal roofing needs. Call today. Get an estimate tomorrow, 541-941-3736.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Okay, since I can't make any sense right now of why two drug mules from Mexico get cut loose by the law enforcement system of Southern Oregon and are allowed to go back to Mexico, and then they come back in September, we're going to set that aside here for a while. I got open phones coming up, 7 o'clock hour, and I have to talk about something which makes even more sense than cutting loose of these foreign national criminals, okay? And that is, the gangrene New Deal and renewable energy forced on Oregon, which makes much more sense. And by the way, the power is out in Talent once again this morning. And I wanted to talk about such things with someone I've been trying to get back on a couple of days. I had to reschedule him because of my problem. So my problem's over. Steve Gorham, it's his problem now. He's executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. And he's written a number of books, four exactly, on energy, climate change, and sustainable development. Over 100,000 copies in print. Not bad. Now, Steve, your latest is Green Breakdown, the Coming Renewable Energy Failure. How you doing this morning, sir? Welcome.
Hi, Bill. Great to join you. I'm doing well.
Yeah, boy, where do we start on something like this? Because you've been writing and we've been talking off and on over a number of days here, and you're thinking that we are truly seeing the cracks in the renewable energy agenda right now as we speak, and that it's getting ready to collapse around us. Would that be a great place to start it?
Well, it is. It's not going to be a sudden thing. It's going to take a while. The world right now is pushing for a thing called net zero energy by 2050, and they want to switch from coal, natural gas, petroleum to wind, solar, biofuels, electric vehicles. And there are billions being committed, about $1.8 trillion last year across the world invested in renewables. But this is beyond a reach out goal. This is an impossibility. It's not going to happen. We're seeing many early indications that this is all going to break down, and that people are going to return to a more sensible energy policy, if you will. And one of the big things that's occurring right now is a worldwide epidemic, and it's not a version of COVID. It's a epidemic of lithium battery fires we're seeing across the world.
Oh, I was wondering where you were going. You're talking about an epidemic. I'm thinking, okay, where's Steve going? Now, I know that there was the monkeypox thing yesterday. He's not talking about monkeypox, is it? You know?
And it's getting to a big deal, these fires, first from vehicles. Mm-hmm. An example, last year a driver was driving his Tesla in Elk Grove near Chicago. The thing started to shake on the expressway, pulled over, it burst into flames, and he didn't have time to get the child seats out of the back seat. He was pleased his kids weren't with him.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to cars, we're seeing all sorts of other fires from lithium batteries, and it's getting to be a big issue.
I noticed that, Baker, California, that was the one I was watching, and I guess that burned for a couple of days out on the interstate, I-15, I think is what it was, out in the desert.
Yeah, this was I-15, a grid-scale battery about as big as a shipping container on the back of a truck caught fire, and This was out in the desert. There was no way to get around this thing, and it blocked an interstate for about 2 days. They had to bring water into people, and they were trying to ferry people in and out somehow, and just a big, big issue. But now Oregon has an advantage. You have 68% of your electricity comes from hydroelectric power, and so you have a big built-in renewable, and you don't have to put in so much wind and solar.
By the way, though, I just want to let you know that for power planting purposes, they do not count that Bonneville power as renewable. They really don't.
Okay.
They don't consider hydro renewable. In fact, the gangrenes here have a death wish to blow up every dam that possibly has a hydroelectric power plant on it. Just so you know. But we're in great shape for now. Okay,
that's a good idea. But places like California, for example, are putting in a lot of wind and solar, and as they reduce their coal, natural gas, and even nuclear, they need backup for these intermittent systems, and so they're planning on putting batteries all over the place. What just happened in San Diego in the last month was again very remarkable. The Gateway Energy Storage Facility, which was a big grid-scale battery facility designed to back up solar and wind, had a fire breakout, and they brought the fire department in. They put it out with water. This was a big building full of batteries, and then it restarted five times. So it actually burned for about a week, destroyed the entire facility. This was the biggest lithium-ion battery, grid-scale battery facility when it was put into place in 2020. But just remarkable what's going on. It's 3 years old. You know, I wonder who insures all these things and where they're getting this insurance from, because these things are a big, big problem. We also had a battery plant in Scotland just go up. This was a recycling plant, and I think they've had some fires at recycling plants in Oregon. But this thing went up, and it took 10 fire departments and more than 50 firefighters to put out this recycling battery plant fire in Scotland. So there's a lot of these things going on, and the more that the governments push to use batteries for vehicles and wind and solar, the more of these we're going to see.
Steve Gorham, once again, Executive Director from the Climate Science Coalition of America, and his latest book is Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Now, what you talk about, I've been kind of aware of and keeping up on these sort of things, and you just have page after page after page of these battery blow-ups, and it's true, it's a real thing. Proponents, though, of the Green New Deal and this renewable energy future, though, Steve, will tell me that the problem is not with renewable energy or even batteries per se. It's with the current crop of lithium-ion batteries, in that the newer technology, is it lithium phosphate or some other battery chemistry, is much less prone just to burn up everybody inside the car and everyone in the neighborhood in the future. Could you comment on that?
Well, I hear some of that, and I think battery technology will evolve. They're doing lithium-ion, but some of these fires are not. They're doing lithium iron, I should say, but they've been having fires as well. That's what I hear. The problem is that these things are mounting. Now, so a question for your listeners, what is the biggest source of fires in New York City right now?
I think it's isn't it the scooters, or aren't the scooters? Those little
It is.
Yeah.
It's not cooking. It's not smoking. It's e-bike lithium batteries. They're now having more than 200 fires a year, and people put these in their storage closet on the first floor or their garage, and the whole building ends up going up. They've had more than 10 people die from e-bike lithium battery fires in the last couple of years, more than 200 fires. And people buy low-cost versions of these, and maybe they're not very well tested. But even if you get a very high-quality e-bike lithium battery, if it's damaged in some way, it can be prone to fire as well.
Is there any way to fireproof the technology that you're aware of? I know I'm asking you to argue against your point a little bit, but I'm just trying to be fair about that.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I don't know. I think it's going to happen. The problem is you trade off things like lifetime and cost and the amount of energy they can hold when you try and downplay these, when you try and make these things less powerful. But they... the other thing about these is that the fires are such a big deal. By the way, our vice president, new presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, has been a very strong supporter of electric school buses.
I remember that.
She's been at a number of conferences talking about how great they are. And I'll tell you, I have a whole bunch of videos of electric buses going up in London, in China, in Paris,
really,
in New Jersey. And it used to be, you know, a bus driver, if his engine catches fire, he gets out and he puts it out with a fire extinguisher. But these things explode. I mean, there's this video of people stopped at an intersection of a bus in China, and they're literally jumping out of this burning bus through the door. It's so Lord God forbid that we fill our schools up with these electric school buses and we start having fires with kids inside. That would be a really terrible thing.
You know, it's so interesting you bring that up, because there was a local school district that I think it was about a year ago that they were making a big deal about it, that some federal grants came in for electric battery school buses. And, I, of course, I thought it was kind of ridiculous for different reasons, because it was out in a rural area and there's a lot of ground to cover in that particular district. But neither one thing or the other. Should we be turning down these electric school buses just on basis of potential safety hazard?
Well, I think so. There's, by the way, you're right. There's federal. There's billions of federal dollars to put these things in. They are much more expensive than a diesel bus or even a propane bus. But, you know, I've told my kids and grandkids, if you have a choice, you shouldn't be on these electric school buses. I just they self-ignite. And we're just pushing this technology way too fast on the fear that humans are causing dangerous climate change. And we need to spend a lot of years making sure these things are safe and we're not seeing these problems.
Steve, do you think, though, that, the arguments that you're saying that the cracks are in the system right now, and you think that it's already on the way down? But out here in the West, especially, it is still being pursued with the fervor of a religious movement. Would you agree with me on that? And that could be one of the biggest challenges facing us in our near future.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there's a number of states that are pushing this. Another example is home appliances. Efforts to move to heat pumps, get rid of natural gas and new construction.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There are seven states now that have cities and counties that have put in bans on new construction for natural gas. I think Oregon is one of those. I know Washington, California are. But those seven states get all the headlines, but there are also 24 states in the United States that have passed laws saying, Mr. County Commissioner, Mr. Mayor, you can't pass a law banning gas and new construction. So there is a war going on right now over appliances in the United States, and it's part of the breakdown. But just to give you another example, we've had a bunch of the big financial interest institutions, BlackRock and others, step back from their positions on pushing for net zero energy and ESG, environmental, social, and governance, in part because we got some states saying, well, we're not going to give you any pension money if you keep pushing ESG. But the other thing is that the stock value of renewable companies has been crashing over the last 3 years. There's an index called the RENIX Index, R-E-N-I-X-X, which is an index of the top renewable companies in the world. That's down 50% over the last 3 years. So it's become kind of a lousy investment for the big financial companies. But there are just a lot of indications that people are going to get back to what's sensible on this.
Okay, so when you're talking about the investment values going down of all these renewable energy systems, that's the canary in the coal mine, because, yeah, you may have had the green people pushing their secular religion on this people that, hey, carbon dioxide that we're all breathing out is destroying the planet, you know, that kind of thing. Although they can't, you know, you can't prove that. In fact, carbon dioxide feeds plants. We know this from high school from middle school biology, for crying out loud. We learned this, and it seems like it's all been forgotten. But everybody piled in because government had a big thumb on the renewable energy scale. It was huge, and lots of subsidies. So are you telling me then that we're going to be lurching back and forth now that A, it's not working, B, it's too expensive, and C, people are rejecting it, but now the investors, the big money, the big oligarchs are starting to reject that? Is that what I'm hearing from you, Steve?
Well, right now the money is going way, way up. The financial guys are saying that, but yeah, and this election is very, very important. But if you look at the amount of federal subsidies that are going to renewables, under the Obama administration, they were about $15 billion a year going to wind, solar, and other things.
Mm-hmm.
They went down under Trump. They've come back up under Biden. And now with the Inflation Reduction Act, the Cato Institute is projecting $80 billion in this fiscal year 2025 that is going to go to all these projects. We have things like carbon dioxide pipelines in the Midwest, carbon dioxide capture and storage. The government's trying to build a a green hydrogen fuel industry, and all of these charging facilities, nobody's making money on charging facilities. They're all losing money.
And many of them are being vandalized, too. Half the time you go into a city that has a charging system and someone has ripped all the copper out of it, right?
So the election's very, very important. If Mr. Trump has said if he wins, he's going to stop all this money flow, and if Kamala Harris wins, then it's probably going to continue. We'll just have to see what's going on. But again, none of these businesses would exist if it wasn't for all this federal money. I mean, you look at these charging companies, their stocks are all way, way down. Plug Power, producing hydrogen stock, way, way down. They're all based on big subsidies from government.
All right. Question for you, though, since you're examining this. This has been the push. The push is that we're not going to use conventional energy, which has worked for a long, long time, and instead we're going to make it next to impossible to produce conventional energy. Is there a danger that we could be heading into the worst of all worlds in which the green energy is failing? Because you're saying that, Steve, that the green energy is failing. It's breaking down. It's not working the way it said, and people are rejecting it. But at the same time, we've been killing conventional energy production. Is this a real danger we could be facing? What do you think?
Bill, I'm trying to remember if I had talked with you previously about the coming electric power shortage in the United States. We have a big imbalance that is just developing, and we've had flat power for the last two decades. It hasn't grown at all. But now, within the last year and a half, we have this artificial intelligence revolution. ChatGPT came out 18 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
NVIDIA became the most valuable company briefly a couple months ago in the world. And we have all these big firms, Microsoft and Amazon and Google, that are building and upgrading data centers to do AI. Now, today, 4% of the electricity in the United States goes to data centers, but it's projected within 10 years it's going to be 20%. And all the grid operators have been caught by surprise by this. And by the way, we also have all these green programs that want to switch to electricity as well. So we are entering a period of probably a decade when the demand for electricity is going to be much higher than what can be supplied. What's going to happen is two things. First, they're going to stop shutting down coal, natural gas, and nuclear plants, and we're already seeing those being extended.
Mm.
And second is everybody's electricity bills are going to be going up. By the way, they shouldn't be shutting down that hydropower in Oregon either. They're going to need it for data centers and other things.
Is there a chance, though, and I know that this is a little bit of a doom-scrolling sort of thing. If I look through your information, it's like doom, because it's okay because of the stupid stuff which has been done. These have been stupid choices that, we used to have a much stronger elite or a much smarter elite. We seem to have really stupid elite people these days, which is a problem. But that being said, is there a possibility that this push towards artificial intelligence and even more data centers will actually stick a nail, just drive a nail or a stake through the heart of the green energy revolution because it can't deliver in order to have that?
Well,
in other words, everybody wants their...
I think it will.
Yeah, you think so?
And we're already seeing power plants being extended. The Diablo Canyon in California is being extended to 2030. They're restarting a nuclear plant in Michigan. There's serious talk about restarting one of the Three Mile Island nuclear plants in Pennsylvania. We have coal plants now being extended in Utah, in Wyoming, in West Virginia. There's talk about them in the TVA in the Tennessee Valley. So grid operators are realizing they don't have enough power, and so the environmental groups are going to be screaming about this. How can you extend coal plants? How can you not shut down natural gas plants? So I do think that this imbalance and this huge demand for electricity is going to stop the green movement in its tracks. And by the way, a lot of people want to electrify heavy trucks and everything else, which uses huge amounts of electricity, and so we'll have to see where all that's going to come from.
What do you think would be the most appropriate use of solar and wind at this point in time? If you were to truly be running the energy system in a wise fashion, because if you try to go too much renewable, the problem is that they have to be backed up 100% with something that's on demand. Otherwise, your lights go out and the power goes away. It's really weird.
Well, I think specialized applications are good. Places where you don't have a grid stretching out to a town, you certainly need those sorts of things. Hawaii, which has no pipelines for energy, is a great spot for wind. And the South U.S. is a pretty good spot for solar, although it's kind of interesting. There's a thing called energy received over energy invested, E-R-O-R-I. And if you look at the analysis, you have to go pretty far south, like down to about New Mexico, before you get as much energy out over the lifetime of a solar system as you actually put in to design the panels and install the system, and that's over a 20 or 25-year period. So right now, in the northern areas like Oregon and north, we're paying money for a lot of energy to be expended in China to produce solar panels, and when we put them in the U.S., we never get as much out over a 25-year lifetime. Doesn't seem to make much sense, but
well, you know what? Where they make it, but you know they talk about it though. There are so many subsidies for it. You'll always see these glowing news stories, Steve, in which the Jackson County Airport receives a grant for $250,000. And it's not that they would have bought the solar cells themselves. It's just that there was some free money sloshing around in the grant stream funding to pay for it. And then people are acting like, hey, this is a economical way to work the system, right? But not if you don't have the free money.
That's a big part of it. By the way, it's breaking down in California now. California's electricity rates in the last 15 years are up about 96%, the highest in the nation. And they just got rid of their net metering program. And everybody's screaming about it in California because what net metering does is subsidize solar at the market rate, the retail rate for electricity, instead of the wholesale rate, which is the generating price. Wholesale rates are typically 4 or 5 cents a kilowatt hour. Retail rates are 13 to 30. In the case of California, 30 cents an hour.
Yeah.
So they just cut all that back because it's been a big wealth transfer from everybody who doesn't have solar cells to the people that put them on the roof, and the prices are just going through the roof. So we're seeing some step back in some places on that as well, but. Solar is great for heating pools. It's great for places that aren't on the grid, and the South U.S. probably pretty good as well.
Yeah,
but I don't know about Oregon. That doesn't seem to make much sense.
Yeah, well, we have a state senator who lives out in Klamath County who went with renewable a long time ago, probably about 15, 20 years ago, back before it was cool. But he was in a rural area, and it would have cost like $50,000 to extend the power lines, you know, to his ranch, and so it's worked really well. But he says, you know, when you're working on nothing but renewable, it really does put a pinch on your lifestyle. You have to figure, okay, am I going to have enough sunshine today to vacuum the floor? You know, you start looking at things that way.
And again, for anybody, if there's a lot of state subsidies and it works for you to put it on your house, hey, that's great. That's fine. But I think our government leaders should have a little more sense.
Mm. When do you think we're going to see the real crisis hit, given between the battery fires, between BlackRock starting to pull away from this sort of agenda? You know, when the big money starts pulling back, that's usually, you know, a sign that there are some issues that are not going to be solvable on this one. But where do you think we're really going to see things starting to really hurt?
This is going to take decades for people to get back to common sense. We are seeing a lot of this in Europe already. They were going to put a bunch of bans in on farming in Europe. They wanted people to cut down their dairy herds because of methane emissions. They wanted them to stop using synthetic nitrogen fertilizer. And the farmers drove into Paris and Netherlands and Berlin and blocked traffic. And the EU has pushed back. And then we've also had a bunch of conservatives that have been elected in Europe as well. And so they're taking a step back from the green policies. We just have to see how this goes. But it's going to be a long struggle for people to get back to common sense.
You figure a decade or more?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, make sure you have a generator. That's what you're telling me, right?
Absolutely right. Yeah, there's going to be a big run on generators.
All right. Sorry to say that, but Steve Gorham, once again, Executive Director of the Climate Science Coalition of America, and he's written a number of books on energy and climate. His latest book is Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Now, that's been out a few months. Where can people get a copy of that? Best place to do it and find out more about you, too, Steve.
Yeah, Bill, they can go to my website, Steve Gorham, GOREHAM.com. I'll send them a signed copy. By the way, all my books are, at least the last three, are color paperbacks. I got a bunch of great sidebars. In addition to the science and economics, you get all kinds of crazy headlines. like the author in the New York Times who said that we should all mate with short people to solve global warming, that kind of stuff.
Oh, but, so we all get small. We get small instead.
Yeah, that
you know, back when I was a kid, I remember there was a Steve Martin comedy album called Let's Get Small. So that's what they want to do to save the planet, right? Yay!
There's a million things like that. So anyway, oh, their e-books is available as well, but they need to find out a little more about the real story and challenge their political leaders.
All right, I appreciate this. Now, do you think, though, that the people who are pushing this agenda with the religious fervor like we've talked about, it's very difficult to get people to change their worldview? You'd be probably the first to understand this, especially when it's a deeply held, almost religious viewpoint about something such as the climate change agenda. What do you think reaches them, if anything at all?
Well, it's a very long road, but hey, we may have global cooling over the next 20 years. It's very, very possible. Very difficult to predict what's going on with global temperatures. We've had many times in the past when it was warmer than today, and also times when it was cooler. I do predict within about 50 years, people are going to look back and view this as a modern superstition, and that the environmental youth of the future will be out there tearing down wind turbine towers to make the environment safer. So we'll just have to see.
Well, Steve, from your lips, all right? Steve Gorham, stevegorham.com. I thank you so much for your time this morning and sharing some of your thoughts on the coming renewable energy failure. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Bill.
Be well. It's a couple minutes after 7. This is KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass, and still on the air. The generators are still working, except in Talent, where, of course, the power is out again.